Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Go For It. I am your host, Paul Gannon. For the next 2 hours, we will be talking sports and having fun doing it. I want all your ideas, all your opinions, and all your beliefs. And, of course, as always, you will get a heavy dose of my opinion. If you have an opinion, the number to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/pgant. That's blogtalkradio.com/pgant. And you can send messages to the show on Twitter at GoForItGant. And while you're there on Twitter, give me a follow at GoForItGant. More often than not, I'll follow back. Big show lined up for you today. Expect to be joined by Philadelphia Eagles defensive end Jason Babin. And Jason's going to be talking about the upcoming NFL season. He also has a football camp going on, so we're going to talk to Jason Babin about that. Also, we're going to be joined by a boxer, Devin Alexander. And we've been trying to get Devin the past few weeks, but he's going to be joining us today, and we're going to talk about his upcoming fight against Randall Bailey, scheduled for September 8th, and we'll see what happens with that fight. It should be a very interesting fight. But again, Jason Babin of the Philadelphia Eagles, and also Devin Alexander, boxer, and we're going to talk about his upcoming fight against Randall Bailey. And I want to start now, Penn State scandal, Joe Paterno. It's still in the news. It's still what a lot of people are talking about. And before I get into it, in a lot of ways, I think what we need to be clear about and understand something that I think a lot of times in life we figure out and look at a person and say that this person is a saint. This person is can't do no wrong. And the problem when it comes to that is we put people on pedestals and human. I mean, pedestals that no human can attain or can reach. No human or no person can reach the pedestals that we put people on. In a lot of ways, we put Joe Paterno on that pedestal. And the funny part about it is, not necessarily funny part, but I want to read an article, Rick Riley, ESPN.com, interesting article on Joe Paterno, and I want to read the first few paragraphs of it. In 1986, I spent a week in State College, PA, researching a 10-page Sports Illustrated Sportsman of the Year piece on Joe Paterno. It was supposed to be a secret, but one night on the phone in my hotel room rang. It was a Penn State professor calling out of the blue. "Are you here to take part in a hagiography?" He said. "What's a hagiography?" I asked. "The study of saints." "You're going to be like the rest, aren't you? You're going to make Paterno out to be a saint. You don't know him. He'll do anything to win. What your media are doing is dangerous." Wow. And that was in 1986, 26 years ago. And the thing about it, and it's so true, what that Penn State professor said back then is so true, because we do ultimately make saints out of people, and it becomes a dangerous game. It becomes a dangerous game when you make saints out of mortals, because that's what Joe Paterno is. That's what we all are. We're mortals. No one is without fault. No one is perfect. No one is perfect. And a guy that I'm a little afraid that may come down this road, and a guy that we are putting on a pedestal similar to Joe Paterno in a lot of ways, but a guy we're putting on a pedestal is Tim Tebow. A guy that, you know, we look at him, he talks about being a virgin, he talks about God and Jesus all the time. I think we put him on that pedestal. We're putting him on that pedestal. The danger of putting anybody on a pedestal is they cannot They cannot be what we want them to be. They cannot be that. They're not that. They're mortals. They're mortal. They're immortal just like you and I. They have come with faults, trappings, just like you and I. And, you know, and I want to say this. I mean, whether the way Joe Paterno handled this whole situation obviously was dead wrong. Dead wrong. But I don't think we can say, and I think it becomes dangerous sometimes when we just judge a person on one incident. We judge a person on one incident. And granted, hey, anytime you're protecting a child molester, it's a bad thing. It's not a good thing to protect child molesters. So anytime you protect a child molester, it's a bad thing. Don't get me wrong here. But what I'm saying is we can't say that this person is all bad. Just like we can't say a person is all good. We can't say a person is all bad. Granted, what he did in terms of covering this thing up, at least that's what we're getting from the Free Report, covering this whole situation up. What we get from that is that, yes, it's wrong to protect a pedophile. In a lot of ways, I don't know if he was protecting Sandusky more so than he was protecting himself, more so than he was protecting what he built, his program. But I guess, you know, if we all hindsight in a lot of ways, we all have the if we have the benefit of hindsight, we can always make the right decisions. And, you know, I think Joe Paterno, if he had another opportunity at it, and there are a lot of things in life we would love to have another opportunity at it. But if he had that opportunity, I would think hopefully he would do the right thing. Hopefully he would sound the alarm on Jerry Sandusky. I mean, you know, the 1998 incident where Sandusky pretty much admitted that he did something. And granted, the courts and the DAs and whoever was involved in it didn't do anything about it. But Paterno at that point knew what he was dealing with. He knew on some level what he was dealing with. He says he doesn't. He said he doesn't. He didn't know. But you look at that, and then you fast forward 3 years later, 2001, where McQueary catches Sandusky with a young boy in the shower, and those showers will be replaced, by the way, in Penn State. But and rightfully so. I mean, you want the filth and the dirt and the grime and even the bad energy off of those showers, by the way. But even looking at that point, you know, it seemed, according to the Free Report, that the president, Spanier, the vice president, Schultz, Curley, Tim Curley, all these guys, they were going to sound the alarm at this point. They were going to go to children and youth. They were ready. They were ready. They were ready. Graham Spanier, the president, Vice President Gary Schultz, and Athletic Director Tim Curley, they were all prepared to go take this to children and youth. But according to the Free Report, after talking to Joe Paterno, they didn't feel comfortable about doing it. They didn't feel comfortable about doing it. So what Paterno says, what Paterno did, you know, we don't know. We don't know. We don't know. But the reality is this. Reality is this. Joe Paterno, what happened at Penn State, you know, we got to be careful, and I think it's a great lesson for all of us here, is don't put people on pedestals. Don't put people just in a place and where they cannot – don't put them on a level that they cannot attain. Don't put people on that level. Don't put people on saint-like, God-like levels because they have problems. They have issues. We all have issues, all of us. We all have issues. And at the end of the day, to me – and I said this on Thursday, and I'll repeat it one more time today. The thing, which is Penn State football, became bigger than anything, and anything was, unfortunately, innocent children. Innocent children. And a lot of times in life, and a lot of people, you know, may not want to admit it, but a lot of times in life, that thing becomes bigger than anything. And bigger than you ever wanted it to be, or bigger than you ever think it could be in your life. But it becomes bigger than anything. You put it over anything. This is a dangerous game. That's dangerous as well, very dangerous. Because sometimes in doing that, you forget about everything else. You forget about what truly is important. And unfortunately, I mean, and what truly is important is kids. Kids are important. Children are important. And for Joe Paterno, I guess, I mean, it is what it is at this point. And it's a sad is what it is, but it is what it is. And Joe Paterno at this point, he's dead. And I talked about it a couple days ago, but maybe the guilt from this whole thing may have hastened his demise. It may have sped it up a little bit. I know definitely not coaching probably sped up his death. I mean, that's what he was. That's what he lived for. And a lot of people, in a lot of ways, believe that Joe Paterno should have been gone years ago, that he outstayed his welcome at Penn State. But the thing about it is, when you're Joe Paterno, 61 years at the university, when you put together the type of program that he put together at Penn State, when you put together that type of program, a lot of times, and I believe this as well, sometimes guys, when they get to that level and done so much for the university, done so much for their school, done so much for the football program, I think those guys in a lot of ways get to determine when they go. But I also think at the same time, that person who is on that level, who is on that paternal level, they also have to be wise and be mindful and understand that they also have to know when it's time to go for them. So they have to be sensitive too, but at the same time, they should in a lot of ways decide when they go because of what they did for the organization. But again, I say this. It is also up. Also, those people need to be mindful and need to understand that. They need to understand that they have to know when to go as well. They have to know when to go as well because you run into a situation like Joe Paterno wasn't going to retire anytime soon. He wasn't retiring anytime soon. And the thing about Paterno, I guess in a lot of ways, it would have taken something like this to get him to retire. I mean, it took something like this to get him to retire. And I don't think it would have taken anything else, really. I mean, I think Joe Paterno would still be coaching if this situation never came out. If this situation never happened, Joe Paterno would still be coaching at Penn State. I think he still would be alive, quite frankly. I think he still would be alive today if he was the head coach at Penn State University. He would still be alive today. But the thing about it is, and the situation happened the way it happened, sad story, obviously, very sad story. And I guess the debate now is the statue. That's a big debate, whether or not it should come down. I don't think we need to go fast with this in terms of taking the statue down. I think we need to figure out what happens during the trials of some of the other key players in this. We need to let that happen first. Once that happens, and then we can figure out some things. But again, this is not a legal document. And so I say, you know, what's in here is probably true. It probably is true. There's probably no doubt about it. It's probably true. But we still have to have patience here when it comes to this whole situation. You have to wait because Tim Curley and Gary Schultz, at some point they will go to trial for perjury. They will go to the trial soon, so you still have to wait. Gary Schultz and Tim Curley still have their day in court. And I think once that is settled, and if the courts deem that, yes, there was a cover-up on all levels, Joe Paterno included, if the courts deem that to be the case, then I think you would have to make or at least think about taking down the statue. And Bobby Bowden, the Florida State, former Florida State coach, another legend, another iconic coach in the game of college football, he came out and said that he believes that the statue should be taken down. The family should want to take the statue down because the simple fact is every time a Penn State game is on and every time the statue is shown you're going to be talking about the whole situation. It's because the situation is going to be talked about and talked about. I mean, could you imagine during a Penn State game how many times the situation is going to be talked about? It's going to be talked about a lot. So Bobby Bowden believes if he was the family, he would want to take that down. And so that's his thought on it. That's his take on it. And it's an interesting take in a lot of ways. I mean, it's truly an interesting take. And it's and thinking about it from that perspective, it might be a good idea to take it down. From a family perspective, you probably want to take it down because you don't want to hear about it over and over and over and over and over and over again and over. I mean, you don't want to keep hearing about it over and over again if you're the family. At some point, you want it to go away. You want it to go away. But it's not going away no time soon. It's not going away no time soon. No time soon. It's not going away. Not going away anytime soon. And the thing about it is, Joe Paterno, as much as we love this guy, as much as we put him on this pedestal, as much as we worship this man in some respect, hero worship this man in some respect, he is a flawed man, just like everybody else, and made a serious, serious mistake. And let me read Bobby Bowden's quotes here. Should his statue be removed? In my opinion, yes, Bowden said. Now, the reason is Penn State's job is now to try to forget this thing. But every time somebody walks by and sees that statue, they're not going to remember the 80 good years. They're going to remember this thing with Sandusky. Just think, every time you go to a ball game at Penn State and they have a shine on a camera on that statue, that's going to be brought up again. So if I was Penn State, if I was Joe's family, I'd say move on from all that stuff. So we'll see. We'll see. We shall see. And LeVar Arrington, a former Penn State player and a big-time fan of Joe Paterno, LeVar Arrington, he believes that everything connected to the scandal needs to be purged, needs to be gone, taken away. Taken away. I mean, a lot of strong opinions about this matter. A lot of strong opinions about this matter. Obviously, the legacy of Joe Paterno has been forever tarnished. But the thing about it is, and it's just, it's a sad story. It's a sad story, but it's a big-time lesson in hero worship. Be careful. Be careful hero worshiping. Because no one can live up to those standards. Be careful about hero worshiping. It's a dangerous game. It is a dangerous game. Don't hero worship people, please. Because they'll let you down each and every time. Because even they can't live up to those standards. They cannot live up to those standards. They can't do it. Impossible for them to do it. Impossible for them to live up to the standards that we want them to. Impossible. Absolutely impossible for them to live up to those standards. Hero worshiping is very dangerous. It's a dangerous game. Very dangerous game. And there's also a report coming out about Joe Paterno and how he was planning his exit strategy. And he planned that exit strategy all the way back in 2011. He amended his contract and he also got some other perks in terms of use of a plane, other equipment for him and his wife. And at the time, you look at it, his contract was not set to expire until 2012. So in 2011, he started planning his exit. Started planning that exit. Getting his everything in order, getting his ducks in order, getting his ducks in a row. But now that you look at it in terms of this whole situation, some are saying, there's some legal experts out there saying now that Joe Paterno may have faced charges. In terms of misleading and lying to the grand jury. He could have faced some charges in terms of that. And also he could face some charges in terms of failure to report sexual abuse. He could have faced charges, a lot of people were saying. A lot of people were saying that possibly Paterno could have faced charges. That would have been something. To see the iconic Joe Paterno facing charges for perjury and failure to protect children from sexual abuse. And at his age, that would have been a tough thing for him. Very tough thing for him to do at his age. You're listening to Go For It on Blog Talk Radio.
Almeida, a.k.a. Corey Live, host of Picturica on the Hub and warm-up host for American Idol and Dancing with the Stars. And right now, you are listening to Go For It on Blog Talk Radio with my man Paulie G and Jeremy. Get it!
Thank
Hello? Jason, how are you, sir?
I'm doing good.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And Jason, let's look at it right now. Michael Vick, he talked about how excited he is about your Eagles going into training camp. He's really looking forward to this season. Do you share in that excitement going into 2012?
Let me tell you something. If I wasn't excited, they ought to fire me. I know what we're capable of, and I know what we can do. I'm really looking forward to this season.
And you look at it now, there is a search of sense of urgency, it seems, around the Eagles right now, especially after last season and the way that went for you guys. Talk about the sense of urgency around the NovaCare complex.
Well, I mean, let me say this. We know what we were capable of last year, and we were so close to getting everything flowing. We kind of just missed that window. And really look at those last half of the season, the way we came together, the way everyone gelled, the way the coaches, the players, the office, the way everything was just working and the way we were flowing. So we're really looking for that same atmosphere, that same mentality, you know, at the this whole season.
And let's look at last season. You talked about it. You guys finished 8-8, but you did finish the year on a 4-game winning streak. Like you said, you guys gelled late in the season. Did the talk of the dream team talk, did all that talk hurt you guys in this early in the season?
No, that had no play whatsoever, you know, in our win-loss column. You know, the biggest thing for us was we had so many changes from the coaching styles, coaching positions, players, philosophy, hierarchy, with a lockout, no time for everything to really gel together. And if you look at that last half of the season, that's what happened. You know, it just took a little more time, I think, than we wanted it to or than we expected it to.
Right. And it's basically almost like you guys were a victim of the lockout?
We don't look at ourselves as victims. I mean, we look at that as a, you know, learning experience, and we're just ready for this year to get here.
We're talking to Philadelphia Eagles defensive end Jason Babin as he prepares for the upcoming NFL season. Jason, last year, the Philadelphia Eagles, the defense, they struggled at times. There are many reasons for that. But in your mind, what happened to the defense? Was it just about gelling pretty much?
Well, I look at when someone wants to talk about, you know, a portion of the Eagles, the offense, defense, special teams, what you got to realize is one, we're a team. You know, we're in this together. And all those different parts of the team, offense, defense, special teams, are interconnected. Whether if something happens in offense, it affects defense. Something happens in defense, it affects offense, special teams. You know, they're all tied in there. So it's, to me, it's, you know, if you want to talk about the offense, the defense, it's kind of hard to, you know, really say that is the reason. You know, but the thing that you can say about us is our losses, maybe outside of Seattle, you know, we did it to ourselves.
Right.
You know, the missed tackles, the misalignment, the, you know, the ball control, ball security, you know, drop passes, you know, what have you. That was on us. You know, that's something we need to take care of. And I know that's a big emphasis this year is it's about us and us taking care of what we need to take care of.
Definitely. Look at it now. You look at you guys last year, your defensive coordinator, Juan Castillo, last year, first year on the job, this year, his second year on the job. Do you sense a different Castillo this time around? Does he seem more comfortable?
Well, here's the thing. When you go from just a position coach to a coordinator, let alone the other side of the ball, to the defensive side of the ball, you know, you're dealing with a different mentality of guys, you maybe the way you coach them, the way they play, the way they respond, you know, so there's obviously a learning curve. But the thing about Coach Castile now is you can tell he's comfortable, he's situated, and, you know, he's hungry to make some plays.
Last year was a big year for you, Jason. 18 big sacks. You did a lot of babbling last year, a lot of it. A lot of babbling. What made you so effective in 2011?
Really, it was my teammates, you know, and obviously coaches put me in the right position. When you have a high-powered offense and you have guys around you in the secondary, linebacker, and internal and opposite side of the end that are out there making plays, you're out there, you know, doing what they're supposed to be doing. You know, I'm just a product of, you know, my teammates, whether it's the offense scoring and the other team happen to throw or it's my teammates locking receivers down or the guys in the middle getting pressure, you know. So it's just really everyone doing their job. And, you know, unfortunately for me, I get a little bit of, you know, glory to, you know, can make the play.
What can we expect out of Jason Babin in 2012? Sack record in 2012?
You know, people talk about that, the sack record, and really all I want to do, I want to get enough sacks for us to get in the postseason. You know, and keep on going, whether that's 10 or whether that's, you know, 25. To me, it doesn't matter. It's all about the Eagles winning and winning big.
We're talking to Philadelphia Eagles defensive end Jason Babin. And Jason, I was looking at the NFL.com power rankings. You guys are at number 3. Do you pay attention to those type of things at all?
No, we don't. I didn't even know that existed until you just mentioned it. Yeah, I don't think it's something that I guess we look at. We know what we're capable of, so we're gonna show up to work every day and prove it to ourselves.
And Jason, right now you got your football camp going on at Rowan University in New Jersey. talk about some of the things going on at the camp.
This is my first year for having a camp, so it's a, you know, it's a bit of a learning experience for me. But it, you know, it's great. I get to get out there with the, you know, some of the coaches, all these young kids, and I get to be hands on and I get to help them. You know, and you know, when we had Moses Foku out there today, and just talking to them too about life, football, and having a good time. That's a big emphasis for us.
So, how much fun is it to be Coach Babbitt?
Let me tell you what. It's not as easy as it looks. I'm my skill set I think is better suited for playing. It's a lot of hard work and it's a lot of patience to be a coach. So you got to tip your hat to those guys that put the time in.
Definitely a lot of time they put in being a coach in the National Football League. And Jason, I got to ask you this. There was talk that you had been talking about or planning on running with the Bulls. Clear that up for us.
It was in my European destination. It was one of the stops. Coach Reed politely asked me up in his office not to do it and then save for retirement. And you know, I'm a respectful person. When your boss tells you to do something or not do something, you better listen because I like doing what I do.
Is that on the Babbitt bucket list?
I had a plane ticket and a hotel reserve, so I think we can all figure that one out.
That's okay. So it's going to get done. It's just a matter of when.
Yeah. Well, when my football days are over, then won't be as big of an issue as it was this offseason.
And Jason, I know you're on Twitter. Where can fans connect with Jason Babbitt?
Jason Babbitt 93. I'm on there. I often stir the pot with the fans, but you know, everything is lighthearted and meant just to have fun and you know, express different point of views. We have a good time with it.
You want to stir the pot today? Anything you want to talk about? Anything more?
Oh no, I got my hands full with these kids today, man. I have to wait until maybe Tuesday to stir the pot again.
Okay. So fans, make sure you go to Jason Babbitt 93. Follow him on Twitter. He's going to stir the pot again on Tuesday. He promised us, right?
That's right.
Jason, we appreciate you stopping by, man. I know you're busy with the kids doing the great things in the community with your football camp. Best of luck with that, and best of luck in the 2012 season. Let's do it again.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it, guys.
Take care. Jason Babbitt, defensive end, Philadelphia Eagles. Jason has a great, great camp going on right now. And you got the sense with Jason, and you get the sense with Michael Vick, his comments and everything, that the Eagles really believe that they're going to do something big this year. I just sense the confidence in him, and I just sense that, you know, he said it over, we know what we can do. 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 And the thing about the Eagles, and he was so right about this, this was a team that shot themselves in the foot week in and week out. They shot themselves in the foot week in and week out. They found a way to lose games. They found ways to lose games. I mean, this was a team, I believe, 5 fourth-quarter leads they let up. 5 fourth-quarter leads this team had, and they lost those games. This is a team that turned the ball over a lot. And this was a team that gave up some leads throughout the course of this season. This is a team that I believe, and I talked about this, is going to be right there with the best of them in this league. It is a lot of talent on this roster, a lot of speed. And the one thing we know about speed kills. Speed kills. So you look at Jason Babbitt, you look at the Philadelphia Eagles, you look at this ball club. This is a ball club that I'm expecting big things out of. I'm expecting big things out of this team. And I was one of the ones who expected big things out of them last year. But we all know what happened last year. But I think this team, and he's so right, they really, really shot themselves in the foot throughout the course of that whole season, throughout the course of 2011. A highly talented ball club. Very talented ball club. They got some help on the linebackers with D'Amico Ryans. They trade away Asante Samuels. Hopefully Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie will be more comfortable on the outside. He was doing some slot work. He wasn't accustomed to the slot. Hopefully Rogers Cromartie will be more comfortable on the outside. I mean, and you look at their safeties, Kurt Coleman, Nate Allen. They were young. They're green. Kurt Coleman had up and down season. Nate Allen struggled a little bit. But hopefully next year that young safety group will be put together and do their thing. And the talent is there. The talent is there. You got the best, arguably the best running back in the game is Shady McCoy. You talk about a big-time deep threat and DeSean Jackson, one of the better tight ends in the game, and Brent Celek. I'm interested about that offensive line. Jason Peters, a guy who had a big-time year for the Eagles in 2011, he's out for the year with the Achilles. But you got Demetrius Bell there. Hopefully he can fill in for Jason Peters and be a good tackle on the left side. Hopefully you get that settled with Jason Peters. But the Eagles, a team with a whole lot of talent. And I can understand Michael Vick's confidence, his excitement going into this year. The key is, to me, is the defense, but also the key is Michael Vick's health. I said this a few weeks back, and I believe this right now. If Michael Vick was healthy for all 16 games, the Philadelphia Eagles would have made the playoffs. And the Philadelphia Eagles, in my opinion, probably would have went to the Super Bowl. They probably would have went to the Super Bowl. If Michael Vick was healthy all 16 games, the Eagles would have went to the Super Bowl. And that's a big leap there. But I believe it. They would have definitely made the playoffs. The Giants wouldn't have been the Super Bowl champions because they wouldn't have made the playoffs. Michael Vick, if he was healthy for the whole season, the Philadelphia Eagles would have made the playoffs, and I'm saying this team ultimately would have made the Super Bowl. That's a large leap there. I know. Very large leap. Very large leap. Very large leap to make. I know. Large leap, I understand. You might be saying easy with that. But he missed three games for the Eagles. He missed three games. If Michael Vick plays in those three games, you don't think the Eagles get one of those games? You don't think the Eagles get one? Well, they got one. They got the one with against the Giants. The three games he missed, Vince Young beat the Giants, lost to the Seahawks, lost to the Patriots. I think they get two out of three with Michael Vick in the starting lineup, and getting two out of three, if they get those two out of three, they're in the playoffs. But no team played better than the Eagles down the stretch. They really finished the season on a high note. And they played well. And Michael Vick, I mean, he has to do better. Got to get those turnovers down. 14 interceptions, 3 fumbles. That's 17 turnovers. He's got to bring that down some. That number has to come down. The 17 turnovers has to come down some. He's got to come to bring those down a little bit. But the team as a whole, they just all have to bring those turnovers down. Jeremy Maclin, he had a big drop against the Falcons. Jeremy Maclin had a big fumble against against the 49ers in a game that, you know, they were going to win. Well, not going to win, but they were in the process of moving the ball, process of getting to field goal range. They were there. And you had Jason Avant. I remember the play against the Bills where he had the ball, got knocked out, and there was interception by the Bills, put that one away. I mean, you can go on and on about some of the games that the Eagles had in 2011 and some of the things that really transpired in 2011. You can go on and on about some of the things that happened. On and on about some of the things that happened in 2011 and each of those games where things would just fall apart. And just bad things would happen at just the wrong times. Wrong things at the wrong times. I mean, throughout the course of that year, you look at the Falcon game, and I'm going to look back at the Eagles' schedule right now. You look at the Falcon game, week two. Michael Vick, he went out of that game, and that was the game that Maclin dropped the ball. The Giants the next week, the Eagles were in the lead. They had the lead against the Falcons in the fourth quarter, had the lead against the Giants in the fourth quarter, had the lead against the San Francisco 49ers in the fourth quarter. So for three consecutive weeks, this ball club had the lead. Had the lead in the fourth quarter and lost it. Had it and lost it. You look at the Bears, they were leading the fourth quarter. You look at the Cardinals, the game Deshaun Jackson was suspended and deactivated for a game. You look at the Cardinal game, they lost 21-17, but they were in control of that game throughout the whole game. They were up big in that game. They were up in complete control of that particular ball game, and they gave it away. They gave it away. Gave it away. Gave it away. In control, and they gave it away. And they lost to the Cardinals. They lost to the Cardinals. But in control and lost it. They weren't up big in that game, but they were in control. And you go on and on, you look at the schedule. The Giants, they win that game. That's what Vince Young was in for those three games. Lost to the Patriots, lost to the Seahawks, beat the Giants. And ultimately, they would go on that four-game winning streak, beat the Dolphins, blow out the Jets, beat the Cowboys, and blow out the Redskins. This is a team that gave up a lot of games, folks. And there are a lot of games they would love to have back. They would love to have those games back. Can't get them back. Can't get them back. But they would love to have him back. They would love to have him back. But the Philadelphia Eagles, I mean, this is a ball club now that many are expecting big things from. I am one of them. I am one of them. But again, I'm the same one who expected big things for them last year. Stuff happens, I guess. Life happens. But again, the Eagles, I think they learned a lot from last year, and I think I agree with Jason. This team took a while to gel, and I think now they're gelled. They're a unit. Juan Castillo has another year under his belt after making a leap from offensive line coach to defensive coordinator last year. He's got another year under his belt, another year of learning, another year of understanding, another year of getting better as the coordinator, calling the game, getting that necessary experience that he needed to call the game, and the pressure's on Andy Reid right now. He has a lot more power. Joe Banner's out of the organization. Andy Reid has much more power right now for the Philadelphia Eagles. A lot of power. And so you look at all those things. The pressure is on the Philadelphia. Michael Vick, right now, you look at him, his 11th season, 12th season going into right now for the Eagles. He has a lot of pressure on him to perform. If he does not perform, in terms of him being a quarterback for the Philadelphia Eagles, it's probably done. And you could argue that. I mean, this is a big part of it. This is a big career. This is a big year for Michael Vick, probably the biggest year in his career. You could say that the last couple of years in terms of big years and biggest years of his career. But this is big. I know after this year, the Eagles can get rid of him, and the cap number will not be much of a big hit for the Eagles. So this is the time next year, if he doesn't perform, where they can move on from him and don't have a big hit. This is it. This is probably the last go-around for these guys if they don't perform, for meaning for Andy Reid, meaning for Michael Vick. This quarterback and coach tandem, this is probably it for them. And you look at the Eagles, and granted, they had, you looked at it when they moved on Donovan McNabb, Kevin Cobb was supposed to be the guy. He was a quarterback that Andy Reid wanted and groomed to be the next big thing. The funny thing about it is, if the Eagles and Andy Reid was much criticized and roundly criticized by many for bringing Michael Vick into the organization when he brought him in right after Michael Vick was released from prison with the whole dogfighting thing, if you look at that situation now, if Andy Reid does not bring in Michael Vick and the Eagles are with Kevin Cobb, Andy Reid's job, he may be already gone. And the reason I say that is Kevin Cobb has not distinguished himself as a quarterback, an NFL quarterback, or an effective NFL starting quarterback in this league. His time with the Cardinals, we've seen a guy who's made a lot of mistakes. We've seen a guy who holds the ball a lot, holds the ball too often, too long, and a guy who has some injuries. He's dealt with injuries throughout the course of his career. So bringing Michael Vick in was probably a blessing in disguise for Andy Reid. And if he doesn't do it, the situation is probably grave in a lot of ways in Philadelphia, or not as optimistic, especially without a quarterback. And Kevin Cobb, again, I mean, he's in a battle with John Skelton for the position in Arizona. So he's fighting for that job in Arizona. So we'll see. We'll see. We'll see what happens with the Eagles. But a lot of people are talking about big things for the Philadelphia Eagles. And I'm one of them who's talking big things for the Philadelphia Eagles in the 2012 season. I want to move on to the thing, the situation that will never, ever, ever end. And that is the situation with Dwight Howard. At this point, Dwight Howard, the deal for Dwight Howard, there is no deal. But the Houston Rockets are looking like they're preparing to put together some kind of big deal to get Dwight Howard. They're trying to put together a deal to get Dwight Howard. And I guess their thought process is, and Dwight Howard has said he's not going to sign anywhere and he's going to explore free agency. But I guess their thought process is, and Houston, you look at them, they're not a championship team as presently constructed. And you don't know when they would become a championship team. But I think the thought in Houston is, let's get him to Houston. Let's see, once we get him to Houston, maybe he'll like it. Maybe he'll become a fan of being of Houston, the city of Houston. A lot of people say it's a nice city. Bring him to Houston, get him to Houston, and let's see what happens. Let's see what happens. And it's obviously a gamble, but it's not an awful gamble, for the simple fact is Dwight Howard's a guy that we know can be a little wishy-washy in terms of his decision-making. He can be a little wishy-washy in terms of his decision-making. I mean, in terms of his decision-making, we can just go reference this whole situation in Orlando. We can reference the whole situation in Orlando. And that situation is simple as this. Simple as this. One day, Dwight Howard, throughout the course of this thing, he wants to be traded, 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 wants to be traded. And then we figure out that before the trade deadline, Dwight Howard says, you know what, I want to opt in. I want to opt in, and I want to be with the Orlando Magic for the next season. I want to give this a chance. Then he has the back injury, out for the year, out for the playoffs. Then Stan Van Gundy, Otis Smith, they're fired. Rob Hennigan comes in as the new GM for the Orlando Magic. And then you look at it, you're saying, okay, maybe they're doing all this. Otis Smith is gone. Maybe Stan Van Gundy's gone. Maybe they're doing this to appease Dwight. And maybe Dwight is saying, you know what, I don't want to play there with Stan Van or Otis Smith. And Dwight denies that he wanted Stan Van Gundy fired, but it became very evident and obvious that's what he wanted. He wanted that to happen. He wanted Stan Van to be fired. He wanted Van Gundy to be fired. But you look at it now, Dwight Howard, again, I want to be traded. I want an opt-in. I want to be traded. I want an opt-in. Now it's I want to be traded again, and I want to go to the Brooklyn Nets. That's where I want to go. I want to go to Brooklyn. And then in the process of all that, and Rob Hennigan of the Orlando Magic trying to work out a deal with Billy King of the Brooklyn Nets, it doesn't work. Brooke Lopez is ultimately signed by the Nets. He can't be traded until January. So in all intents and purposes, that takes the Nets out of the mix until at least January. So now the Houston Rockets, a team that, and then the Lakers, they're out there, and they'd be willing to give up Andrew Bynum. But the thing about it, are the Magic willing to take Bynum back without any guarantees of him signing a long-term deal? That's a big-time risk. But speaking of big-time risk, the Houston Rockets are willing to take a big-time risk. They're willing to bring in a Dwight Howard, and also willing to take back some bad contracts, Glenn Big Baby Davis and Jason Richardson, and also they're willing to take back Chris Duhon. They're willing to take those things back. And they're also talked, they're willing to take back the bad contract of Hedo Turkoglu. and they just amnestied Louis Scola, so he's off their books. And he, so his deal was worth $21 million over three seasons. He had three seasons remaining for $21 million. They're taking him off the books, so he's going off the books. And now, the Rockets are trying to put together something to get Dwight Howard. And apparently what they're looking to do is the Magic or the Rockets are looking to ship Kevin Martin, Patrick Patterson, Marcus Morris, Chandler Parsons, also some of the draft picks that they just some of the guys that just drafted, Jeremy Lamb, Royce White, Terrence Jones. They're looking to get rid of some of those guys as well. Also, they have a lottery pick possible in the Kyle Lowry deal where they traded Lowry to Toronto. So we don't know how good Toronto is going to be, but it's looking like Toronto probably won't make the playoffs. So there's a possibility that that pick could be a lottery pick. I think, to me, this is a deal, if you're the Magic, that you want to take, get assets, get draft picks, get away, get rid of some bad contracts, break this thing down, build this thing back up. I think that's what you want to do. This is the route you would love to take. If you're Houston, this is a dangerous move, but it's not really as dangerous as a lot of people may believe. Let's look at it. The Houston Rockets did not make the playoffs last year. And if the Houston Rockets were to make the playoffs this year, do you think the Houston Rockets would be better than a 7th or 8th seed? Probably not. So, the Houston Rockets are in 7th and 8th seedville. They're in a town called 7th and 8th seedville. They're in that town. Kind of like the Hawks. The Atlanta Hawks were in 4th or 5th seedville. You look at the Houston Rockets, they're in 7th and 8th seedville. And they're in that town, and they will be in that town for the next few years. So, bringing the Dwight Howard to Houston with the possibilities of trying to be able to bring in other people, building around Dwight Howard is a better proposition than building around what they have. It's a better proposition than building around what they have. So, to me, it's a risk, but it's really not that much of a risk. It's not really as big of a risk as people are making it out to be. You get a franchise center in Dwight Howard, and you can have some questions about his back. But, again, you get a franchise-caliber center in Dwight Howard, a guy who's gotten very far in this league in terms of getting to an NBA Finals, in terms of getting to a conference final, in terms of being successful. It's not very hard. It's not as hard to build around a 7-footer as good as Dwight Howard, as dominant as Dwight Howard. So if you're the Houston Rockets, to me, you really don't have anything to lose here. I think you go after this, and I think you go after this hard. Now, yeah, I guess the only question is in terms of some of those draft picks, you got to be careful. I mean, if you are bad, if you do trade Dwight Howard this year, you get traded for Dwight Howard, but you ultimately lose Dwight Howard in the offseason, you got to be careful in terms of what do you lose in terms of those draft picks moving forward. And those draft picks could be, you know, draft picks that could be good draft picks. But I look at it like this. I mean, Dwight Howard becomes an asset for you. He becomes an asset for you during the trade deadline if you get the sense he's not going to re-sign. And it becomes an asset for you in the offseason in terms of a signing trade because you can pay him the most money. There's no one that can pay more money to Dwight Howard than you. You can pay the most money to Dwight Howard. So in some respect, he becomes an asset for you. I think the Rockets are in a position where they should do it. I think that it's worth doing for the Houston Rockets. Everybody's known around the league that the Rockets either want Bynum or Howard type of player. That's what they want. But you look at the Houston Rockets, this is a deal to me that if they can make it, you take the chance and do it. And I think this is a good deal for the Magic as well, because it breaks down what they have and they can really go through with this whole rebuilding process. The Magic, throughout the course of the franchise history, you have the dominance of Shaq for a few years in Orlando. You had Shaq. Then Shaq decides to say he wants to go to greener pastures and decides he wants to go to the Los Angeles Lakers. But you had a big-time franchise center in Shaquille O'Neal in Orlando. You had him in Orlando. You had that center. You've had that center in Orlando in Shaquille O'Neal. You had him. You had him there for 4 seasons. Then he goes to the Lakers. Now you go. You lose Shaq back in 96. A few years later, you bring in the Dwight Howard. You get him. Second pick in the NBA draft. First pick in the NBA draft. You get Dwight Howard. Actually, it was a second pick. Second pick by the Orlando Magic. The Bobcats took Emeka Okafor with the number one pick. But you look at Dwight Howard. You look at Dwight Howard. Spent 8 years in Orlando, so Orlando had to wait a few years to get another franchise caliber center in Dwight Howard. Now he wants out. He wants to get out. He wants to go to a big market in Brooklyn, New York City. Where Brooklyn at? Where Brooklyn at? Because Brooklyn really is doing some big things and has done some big things. Has done some big things this offseason. The Brooklyn Nets have really set themselves up. Really have set themselves up good. And Dwight Howard was the first pick in the 2004 NBA draft. Emeka Okafor was second. Because there was a lot of talk back then whether or not the Magic should go with the polished 4-year player and Emeka Okafor over the potential and up Dwight Howard, the high school player, coming out of Atlanta. You wonder if the Hawks, I know the Hawks are a possible team for Dwight Howard. You wonder if the Hawks could get in there, especially Dwight Howard is an Atlanta guy. He's from Atlanta. That's his hometown. So you will wonder possibly if the Hawks could be a team that could be in the mix for Dwight Howard. You wonder. But looking at it now, Dwight Howard is a thing that we're still talking about. It's a thing that we probably will be talking about until he is finally traded. A lot of people's guests are the Lakers. Could be the Rockets. They put together a strong package for Dwight Howard, and they really want the guy. We shall see. We shall see. Should be very interesting what happens with this whole Dwight Howard situation. My guess, I'm going to guess the Lakers. Straight up for Andrew Bynum. That's my guess. But we'll see. We shall see. But I think if you're Orlando, I don't think you can make that trade for Bynum without any assurances of getting a long-term contract done. That's the deal. You got to make sure you get a long-term deal for Andrew Bynum. You got to get that taken care of first before you make that determination, before you decide to do that, before you decide to trade for Dwight Howard. You got to get it. You got to get it if you're the Magic before you decide to trade Dwight Howard to the Lakers for Bynum. You got to get that. You got to get a guarantee that Andrew Bynum is going to sign with you moving forward. The second hour of Go For It starts right now. And we're back. Second hour of Go For It. First hour, we were joined by Jason Babin of the Philadelphia Eagles. Second hour, we're expected to be joined by boxer Devin Alexander as he prepares for his upcoming fight against Randall Bailey for the IBF welterweight title. It's on the line. Bailey, Alexander, September 8th. In terms of a date, we're really not sure. I mean, in terms of a location, not too sure at this point. Could be St. Louis. Could be elsewhere. I know Bailey has stated that he doesn't want to go to St. Louis. So, we'll see. We shall see. And the second half of the baseball season has gotten underway. A lot of storylines going into the second half. One of them, you got to talk about the Pittsburgh Pirates, a team right now. Yeah, you remember the Pirates last year. The Pirates were a team. They were right there in the mix. They were one game behind in the NL Central. The Pirates were one game behind. And then it just fell apart for them. All fell apart for the Pirates. They would lose 12 out of 13 games at one point. And basically they ended the year at 72-90. So it fell apart for that ball club. This year it seems a little different. He's a little different. Andrew McCutchen is balling. Some are saying he could be the MVP of the National League. They're getting some great, great pitching. A.J. Burnett, James McDonald, they're getting it done. But we'll see. The Cardinals are still lurking. The Reds are obviously there. Will the wheels fall off for the Pittsburgh Pirates? Will the wheels fall off for the Pirates again, like it did last year? Should be interesting as we look at the second half of the season. Also, I think another thing we need to look at, is the Philadelphia Phillies, a team right now that lost again last night to the Colorado Rockies 6-2. Cliff Lee takes another loss. But the Phillies are a team that right now, and they're talking about Cole Hamels, and that's another big storyline. What are they going to do with Cole Hamels? The talk is that the Phillies are preparing a substantial offer to Cole Hamels. They're preparing that offer for Cole Hamels. Hamels can be a free agent at the end of the year. And the Phillies are looking and preparing an offer for Cole. We'll see what happens there. That should be big. But the Phillies at this point, 12 back in terms of the wild card, 15 back in the NL East. It looks like it's just not the year of the Phillies. And Ryan Howard just getting back. Chase Utley pretty much just getting back. Roy Halladay was out. He's expected to come back very, very soon. So the Phillies are a team, an obvious surprise. Obvious surprise for the Phillies. No one expected them to be this bad. No one expected them to be this bad. Then the question will become whether or not the Phillies will be buyers or whether or not they will be sellers in the second half of this season. If I'm the Phillies, I think I try to hold pat as much as possible and come back next year with a healthier ball club and see if you can take care of the leaky bullpen, because that the bridge to Papelbon has just been absolutely dreadful. The bridge to Papelbon has been dreadful, very dreadful. But you look at it now, other storylines to look at as we go into the second half of this baseball season. Steven Strasburg of the Washington Nationals, what happens there? A lot of talk that he has an innings limit. The limit is 160. Right now he is at 99 innings. The question becomes, and the Nationals do have a four-game lead in the division, over the Atlanta Braves. The question becomes now, do you start skipping starts for this guy? And I think if you do have to think about skipping starts right now, so you can have him late in that season, late during that push that you want to make to win the division. I think you during that pennant run, that pennant race, I think you gotta think about maybe resting him some starts here and there right now, and hopefully with the hope that you can build up the lead in the division, you can find more time to rest him so he will be ready to go and prepared for the end of the season and into the playoffs. It looks like the Nationals are for real. It looks like the Washington Nationals are for real. You got the Phenom, Bryce Harper, Stroudsburg, of course. They look for real. And you've waited, you're waiting, and you're waiting, and you're waiting for the Nationals to fall off. And they haven't done it. You're waiting. You're just waiting for them to fall back. And to this point, and we're past the first half of the season, to this point, this team has not fallen off. It has not fallen off. They're getting big-time play out of Ian Desmond, Bryce Harper, both All-Stars, and these guys are leading the way for this ball club. LaRoche is getting it done for them. I mean, Zimmerman also for this team. They're playing some great baseball, and they're getting it done with the pitching as well. They're getting the pitching. They are getting the pitching. And they're getting some great starting pitching. Gio Gonzalez is getting it done for these boys. 12-3 for the Washington Nationals. Under 3 with the ERA. Stroudsburg, of course, getting it done. The Nationals seem for real. They seem for real. I think they are for real. They aren't going anywhere. I don't think the Nationals are going anywhere. I don't think they're going anywhere, folks. But I think if I'm the Nationals, I find a way to rest Steven Strasburg before we get into the hot and heavy August, late August into September. I think that's what we need to do if you're the Nationals. Not we. That's what they need to do if they're the Nationals. The Nationals need to do that. They need to really, 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 really think about trying to rest this guy because, again, this is not about this year. This is about next year and moving forward. This guy has all the tools, all the makings of being a big-time starting pitcher in baseball for years to come. He has all the makings of that. All the makings of that. We shall see what happens there. We shall see. And then you got to look at a lot of no-hitters in the first half of the season. 5 to be exact. 5 no-hitters during the first half of this season. And the record is 7 for the most no-hitters in the season. Does it get broken? Well, they're off to a good start, 5. You still have the whole second half to go. So it's possible. It's possible. Very possible. And speaking of the break, and you got the All-Star game and the home run hitting contest. To me, the home run hitting contest is pretty much unwatchable. It's not very exciting. It's not much intrigue to me. Not much drama. To me, no one does All-Star weekend, All-Star festivities like the NBA. You got the dunk contest. You got the three-point shooting contest. I mean, the NBA does it the best in my mind. The All-Star games, to me, for the NBA is the best, too. It's the best. It's very exciting to me. I mean, an All-Star game is an All-Star game. An All-Star game is an All-Star game. But the most exciting All-Star game to me is the NBA All-Star game. And with the NBA All-Star game, it's excitement personified. The weekend is great. The dunk contest to me last year wasn't that great, but before that you were getting some good contests. You had Dwight Howard in it, doing some great big-time dunks, and it was a good contest. This year wasn't that great. I'm not going to sit here and lie to you. The dunks were good. The dunks were good this year in the NBA contest, but the problem was is the names. Jeremy Evans really does not get people excited. The name Jeremy Evans does not excite many people. So it wasn't necessarily the dunks per se. It was the names of the people doing the dunking. So, I mean, but I think no one does it like the NBA. The All-Star game itself was a snooze fest. It was a blowout, 8-0. National League gets the shutout, but it wasn't very exciting. Wasn't very exciting. The game was pretty much over after the third inning. Wasn't an exciting game. Was not an exciting game. And I know the baseball's tried to do many things to make the All-Star game count. Making it the league that wins the All-Star game, that league gets home field advantage. Got basketball on my mind talking home court. That league gets the home field advantage. And the National League, whoever comes out of the National League, will get home field advantage. But if you look at it, that was something that used to alternate anyway from National League to American League. So it really doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. But in terms of the All-Star game and the home run hitting contest, it's just boring. It really is boring. Boring. Darn near unwatchable. Not very exciting at all. Not very exciting. And I think something, I don't know what can be done in terms of making it more exciting. I don't know really what really could be done. I don't know what they can do to make it exciting. But it's just not exciting. It's just not watchable in my eyes. Not very watchable in my eyes. But that's just me. And, you know, All-Star games in general have been getting a lot of flack, especially looking at the Pro Bowl and how many people talked about that game and how it really was not very, very well played. And it wasn't. It was not well played. It looked like flag football out there. It looked like a bunch of guys who didn't want to get hurt. I couldn't blame them. But it looked like a whole bunch of guys that didn't want to get hurt. And they played as such. Guys did not want to get hurt. And that's the way they played. And to me, the NFL game, Pro Bowl, I don't know how you can make it better. And I'm talking about the NFL Pro Bowl, the Pro Bowl. I don't know how you can make it better. I mean, football's a violent game. It's a violent game, and guys are not going to go into the Pro Bowl to mess around with their money and get hurt. I mean, it's not worth guys playing in the Pro Bowl and possibly getting hurt. It's not worth it. It's not worth it at all. So you look at it now, the NFL is trying to find ways to make it better. I think baseball needs to try to find ways to make the home run hitting contest better. I think the NBA is just fine. I think what the NBA could do, though, is try to get some of their stars to get into the dunk contest. Try to get LeBron James to get into it. Try to get Dwight Howard to come back to it. Try to get stars. Try to get recognizable names to be in the dunk contest. Blake Griffin, have him, try to get him to come back. I mean, I think that's what the NBA needs to do to make the dunk contest better. Because it wasn't about bad dunks. It was about bad names and the names not being recognizable and familiar to people. The year before, you had Blake Griffin, and what he and I mean, that dunk contest was great. That was a great slam dunk contest, and many people were excited. And I guess the anticipation for that particular dunk contest was with Blake too. I mean, there was great anticipation with Blake Griffin. You remember Vince Carter many years ago, the anticipation for that one. And I mean, it was similar in terms of that with Blake Griffin, the anticipation. A lot of people were very, very excited to see Blake Griffin in the slam dunk contest. And I think that's what the dunk contest needs. It needs recognizable names. You get recognizable names in the dunk contest, settled. The dunk contest is taken care of. It's great. The best All-Star weekend, in my mind, still is the NBA. And I don't think anybody can tell me otherwise. Might be a little biased, sure. Might be a little biased, definitely. But no one can tell me that the best dunk contest, is not the NBA. No one. No one can tell me that. And if you tell me that, I'll argue with you and tell you that it's not. I'll tell you that it's not. I'll argue you down and tell you that it's not. That's what I would do. But that's just me. That is just me. And now, switching gears to the NFL now, and Drew Brees finally has his contract. Saints and Drew Brees apparently have agreed on a 5-year, $100 million contract that includes a first-year take of about $40 million. In terms of guarantees with this contract, you're talking about $60 million in guarantees with this contract with Drew Brees. He's finally signed and finally taken care of this. It took a long time. It took a very long time. And the 2012 salary breaks down as $37 million in bonus money, $3 million in salary. So Drew Brees becomes the highest paid player per annual salary in the NFL after this deal. He becomes the highest paid player in terms of annual salary with this deal. Drew Brees has finally gotten paid. And he should have. I mean, there's really no reason why Drew Brees shouldn't have got his money. I mean, I talked about it this week. I mean, record-setting season in terms of yardage for Drew Brees. And you don't want the distraction. You got enough distractions in New Orleans, the suspensions, the bounties, all that stuff. You got enough distractions there. You're not having your coach for the year. Enough distractions already there in New Orleans. You had distractions there already. You don't need any more. So the way I see it is, you don't need the distraction of Drew Brees and whether or not he will get his money and whether or not he'll be there in training camp. And you don't need all that. And now, with Drew Brees being signed, that is behind the Saints. They can move on from that whole situation. But Drew Brees, he finally got his money. 5 years, $100 million. 60 of it is guaranteed. $60 million for Drew Brees, guaranteed. What a country we live in that you can get $60 million for throwing a football, and that's the way it is. And it's beautiful if you're Drew Brees. He earned it. I mean, yeah, I know people say, well, no one's worth $60 million. No one throwing a football deserves $60 million. You're probably right, but the NFL's a billion-dollar business. So, yes, he is worth $60 million. It's a billion-dollar business, folks. A billion-dollar business. So he is worth his $60 million. He's worth it, each and every penny of it. He earned that. And you remember Drew Brees before he came to New Orleans. You remember coming off that shoulder surgery. Drew Brees coming off that shoulder surgery. And coming off that shoulder surgery, Drew Brees, many people didn't think he would be the same quarterback, did not think he would be the same quarterback. And you remember, I mean, Drew Brees is not known for having the strongest arm in this league. But many people thought. And the thing about it with Drew Brees, you had it where in San Diego it came down to him and Phillip Rivers and determining whether or not the Chargers would stick with Brees or go with Phillip Rivers. But, Brees decided that, you know, the Chargers decided on some level as well that they were going to go with Rivers and Brees. And you remember the talk. I mean, the Dolphins were in hot pursuit of Drew Brees, and you remember their doctor suggested that the Dolphins not sign Drew Brees. And ultimately, because of that, the Dolphins ended up trading for Dante Culpepper. They ended up trading for Dante Culpepper. And we all know what happened with Dante Culpepper in Miami. It didn't work out at all. Dante Culpepper was a shell of himself coming off that big-time knee injury that he had. He had a gruesome knee injury, but he wasn't the same person. And ultimately, Drew Brees went to the Saints, and the rest is history. The rest is history. The rest is history. And New Orleans is now, when New Orleans wins the Super Bowl, New Orleans wins that Super Bowl, and they get it done. And that's all because of Drew Brees. And he was the guy that helped usher in the post-Katrina era for the Saints. And having Drew Brees there really, really helped that whole situation. Really helped that whole situation. Really did. For the New Orleans Saints. But the Saints, I mean, and Drew Brees earned his money. This is his last big contract, 33 years old. He's earned his money. This is it for him. This is his final contract. 5 years, $100 million, after playing through a six-year, $60 million deal with the Saints. So this is it for Drew Brees in terms of contracts. So he had to make sure he made as much money as possible. He did that. The Saints are fine. The Saints have moved forward with Drew Brees, and now they can get rid of it, not worry about that distraction. I guess ultimately still have to worry about the distraction of the whole Bounty Gate situation, the distraction of not having their coach, Sean Payton, for this season. Big, 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 big situation. That would have been big. To me, that would have been very big for the Saints not to have Drew Brees at the start of training camp, and I think that would have been a very detrimental situation for anybody dealing with the New Orleans Saints, a very detrimental situation for all parties involved. All parties involved. And speaking of the Saints, you have their defensive coordinator, who was suspended indefinitely, Greg Williams, who says basically that he thinks he will coach again, that he will be able to coach again. He says he will coach again. He says he will coach again. And all he says was, I will coach again. I will coach again. And I think he will coach again. Obviously, it's not going to be this year, and it may not even be next year either. I'm thinking maybe 2 years from now, Greg Williams will be a coach somewhere. And I don't think he'll be a coordinator coach. I think he'll bring him back slowly, probably as a position coach. And then ultimately, I think he'll get and become a defensive coordinator once again. He had some success throughout his career, Greg Williams. And I think after 2 to 3 years, people will forget about these bounties, and I think he will get another opportunity 2 to 3 years from now. But it's not going to happen this year, obviously. And it's not going to happen next year, obviously. But I think he will get it 2 to 3 years from now. 2 to 3 years from now. And it's you know, I mean, that story is that story, and it's not going to go away anytime soon. It's in litigation right now. So we'll see how that situation all ends up, this whole bounty scandal. But hopefully they can get this whole thing taken care of. And it's my hope that these guys will get an opportunity to at least have their suspensions reduced, especially Jonathan Vilma. It would be my hope to see his suspension reduced. It would be my hope. We'll see. And then moving around the NFL, Terrell Owens, the great Terrell Owens, there's talk possibly right now that Terrell Owens possibly could do jail time. There's a possibility that Terrell Owens could do jail time. And he's in hot water pretty much for missing a hearing. And right now, Terrell Owens is behind $20,000 in child support payments. $20,000 in child support payments. And this is a guy who, in a lot of ways, is effectively broke. He's broke right now. And I don't know why he wouldn't show up. I don't know why. Then this is for his seven-year-old daughter, I should say. And apparently they had an agreement, him and the mother of his child. They had an agreement that Terrell would pay $5,000 a month. They had an agreement, and apparently he didn't live up to that, and he skipped out on a hearing. And this missed hearing could possibly do time. He possibly could do some time because of it. Now, I mean, hopefully he can work this thing out and get this thing all cleared up for his sake. But it's just, you know, it's a sad, sad story here in Terrell Owens and him being broke and him not getting another opportunity in the National Football League. I mean, I still think he can help a ball club. I still think physically he can help a team. I still think he can play. His last year with the Bengals, he had a good year. Had close to 1,000 receiving yards. Had over 900 yards receiving. He had a good season for the Bengals. And for whatever reason. And, I mean, not for whatever reason. I think we all know the reason. Terrell Owens has been known throughout the course of his career to be not a good guy in the locker room, not a guy you want in the locker room. Has been a divisive force in San Francisco, a divisive force in Philadelphia. He was a divisive force in Dallas. So everywhere he's went, every place he's gone, he's been a guy that's been a troublemaker. He's been a troublemaker everywhere he's went. Sad story for Terrell Owens. You hope T.O. will get another opportunity to play in this league, in the National Football League. I'm rooting for T.O. I really am. I really am rooting for the guy, but it's not looking good for T.O. But another guy that I'm rooting for, another guy that I'm a big fan of, he's about to join us now. Let's bring him in now. St. Louis finest, the one, the only, Devin Alexander. Devin, how are you, sir?
What's happening, partner?
Doing well. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, man. Thanks for having me once again.
Definitely, definitely. And Devin, let's get right down to it. Randall Bailey's talking again this week, and he's saying he does not have the contract for this fight and that he is not willing to go to St. Louis for this fight. Clear this whole thing up for us.
Well, this is the thing. You know, like I said before, people are always on the internet and, you know, on the radio shows saying that I won't come out of St. Louis. That's not the case. It takes two to tango. So if I'm the only person that has a fan base and the other person don't, then where do you think the fight's supposed to go? You know,
right.
if it's the only place that you can sell the fight, where else are you supposed to go? I would love to fight outside of St. Louis. It's not like I'm, you know, obsessed with fighting in St. Louis. That's the only place I want to fight. No, it's about business. Business first, you know, and if that's where you're going to get generate the most money, and then that's where we got to fight. I will fight Bailey anywhere. You know, anywhere that they want to host a fight, I will fight. I will fight in his hometown, Miami.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it just happens that way, and he don't have a fan base in Miami, so we can't go to Miami. So,
right.
You know, that's the issue. That's the issue right there, you know, so.
I mean, will this fight still happen?
Yes, of course.
It's still going to happen.
September 8th, it's still going to happen. And we're still in the gym, you know, working out and, you know, still going to happen. So,
okay.
Just got to get the particulars, you know, in order. You know, I don't have to fight in St. Louis. But, you know, we just have to see what happens.
And how excited are you for this opportunity now? Your second fight at the welterweight limit. How excited are you for this opportunity?
I am excited, man. I'm blessed, actually, because this is my second fight in 147, and I'm fighting for a title. You know, so I'm definitely excited, and I definitely feel blessed. I'm excited because Randall Bailey, he's a true competitor. He's been around the game a long time, a veteran in the game. You know, I know he's going to come to fight, and everybody always talking about his legendary right hand. So I'm just excited for the challenge, and I'm excited to be fighting for another title. So, you know, I'm excited.
And you talked about it with Randall Bailey and everything. He's been saying throughout the course of this time that he's always wanted to fight you, always wanted to fight you. Did you know that?
Yeah. I did. Be perfectly honest, I did not know he wanted to fight me. You know, Don King, he said he went to Don King's office to fight me, and I didn't know that. I didn't know he always wanted to fight me. If I would have knew that, we would have been made to fight. Because as you know, you can see my record, I run from nobody. I don't care if you hit like Mike Tyson. I don't care if you, you know, fast, slow, you know. It doesn't matter because I believe in my skill. So, you know, I definitely didn't know nothing about it. The first time I heard about it was on the internet that he,
right.
You know, wanted to always fight me. And that's where we are right now. And I stepped up to the challenge. He said he wanted to fight me. I stepped up my challenge. I said, okay, let's make it happen. So that's where we at.
And looking at Randall Bailey, his last performance against Mike Jones, knockout of the year type of candidate, for that particular fight, I mean, that was a vicious, vicious, vicious knockout of Mike Jones.
It was.
How do you avoid that power?
Man, I mean, Mike Jones, I can't believe he fought like that. I mean, all night he was, like, fighting scary. Like, okay, I got to avoid his right hand. I know he got power, and I know if he hit me with his right hand, he can knock me out, so I have to avoid it. That's how he was fighting the whole fight, you know. You know, Randall Bailey throwing 5-6 punches a round. I mean, 10 at the most. And you will let him catch you with a right hand that he's been trying to land all night. He deserved to get caught with that. You know, and why would I sit there knowing that's his strength and let him hit me with it? If you let Randall Bailey hit you with that, then you deserve to get knocked out.
And to me, I kind of look at this fight kind of similarly to Maidana. Maidana, a guy known for his power, but a guy that I think you can outbox, a guy that if you box him, you won't have any problems with him. Do you view it that way?
I do, in a sense. And plus, you know, Randall's, you know, you got to be perfectly honest. Randall's not young. He's 37, 30, going on 38 in September. So, yes, I did my homework, and I know how old he is, but he's not, you know, young. So you got to take that into consideration. And I'm a younger fighter, and we just about to see. You know, we just about to see when we get in the ring who's going to be able to implement their game strategy on who and see what happens.
We're talking to welterweight contender Devin Alexander as he prepares for his upcoming bout against Randall Bailey September 8th on Showtime. And Devin, looking at it now, and here's my concern. Here's another concern for me, for you. Mm-hmm. You're a guy that you like to trade at times. You like to trade at times. And mm-hmm. and I think that would be to the benefit of Randall Bailey because of his power.
Mm-hmm.
How do you avoid fighting that particular fight? How do you avoid fighting his fight?
This is the thing. With me, I constantly learn from my mistakes. You know, it depends on the guy I fight is what, you know, I'm going to train for. I knew Medina was going to come forward, and I know he's going to come all night, and I know he had some power. So I was able to utilize that and implement my game strategy. I'm going to trade when I'm supposed to if and when this fight happens. I'm going to trade when I have to, not because I want to. I'm going to train when I have to and not going to be stupid, and you know, because, you know, you got to be smart in the ring, and I'm a smart fighter. And, you know, I just got to be smart. You know, I'm definitely not worried about Randall Bailey's right hand. I'm not worried about his hook. I'm not worried about anything because, you know, this is boxing. You know, everybody has power. Everybody has, you know, 2 feet, 2 legs, and, you know, everybody's fought before. So what's the sense of being scared? It's just you got to be smart about what you do and get in there and handle your business and, you know, not get caught doing stupid stuff. So that's my thing about it.
And I got some quotes here from Randall Bailey's promoter, Lou DiBella. DiBella says, Randall is the hardest puncher in the game, and Devin often leaves himself open. So we know that there will be chances for Randall to land that big punch.
Right.
Your thoughts?
He definitely going to have a chance, but the question is he going to be able to do it? He's not going to be able to do it because I'm going to see it coming from a mile away. You know, without talking too much, you know, I'm not a stupid fighter. You know, I'm not a scary fighter. I'm not going to fight scary. So to sum it up, you know, they're going to be in for a fight. So, you know, they continue to talk about his right hand, you know, all of that, but you're going to need more than that. You're going to need way more than that. And, you know, if he's dependent on that, then he's going to look up and he's going to be down 9-0 and the fight's going to be over. So, you know, they can depend on that all they want. And plus, they better not sleep on my power because my power is there.
And you had your date reserved for Showtime in August. So with that being said, you probably already started camp.
Yeah. I don't stay at the gym too long. So I'm always in the gym working on different type of things, but not going too hard until I know it's for sure, you know, this is a done deal. So, you know, I started work like a couple weeks ago and, you know, just ready to step in on the gas and ready to go into camp mode.
Is that difficult? Because you said it, not knowing that this will be a done deal. Is that difficult at this time as you prepare for this fight, not knowing if it'll actually happen?
Yeah, But, you know, you got to still prepare, you know, no matter what. If this one doesn't fall through, you know, something else is going to happen and you're going to be able to get another opponent. But you just got to stay ready. You got to stay ready, stay in tune, and you can't worry about that. You got to let your management and your promoters handle that. And you just got to continue to do what you got to do and make sure you're ready and focused.
We're talking to welterweight contender Devin Alexander. And, Devin, you're now being advised by the most powerful advisor in boxing, Al Haymon. He represents such guys as Mayweather, Andre Berta, to name a few. Why'd you choose Haymon?
Well, me and my coach, we got together. You know, in anything, politics, in sports, in anything, power gets you, you know, stuff that you wouldn't even think you can get, you know.
Right.
You know, in boxing, if you're not with the power, you're not going to get the right fights. If you're not with, you know, the A side, you're not going to get the right fights. You know, you're going to be an opponent all the time. So you want to get with the powers to be with the people who have the power to, you know, get you the right fights, get you the exposure that you need, and get you the proper respect that you deserve. And we felt like, you know, Al Haymon was a good guy to do that at this time, because if you don't have power, then we're going to be, like, left out in the cold and people are going to move over, move to the next, you know, person or whatever. So,
right.
You know, you got to make yourself relevant, and we just felt like, you know, Al Haymon will make us relevant and keep us relevant and get us the right opportunities that we deserve.
Now, Devin, I want to ask you a few questions around the sport of boxing right now. And a few weeks back, we had Victor Ortiz, who was in line to face Canelo Alvarez. He quit on his stool, had the broken jaw. Many have been critical of him for quitting on the stool because of the broken jaw. What are your thoughts on that whole thing?
Well, you see, this is the thing, man. People that comment like that hasn't boxed, doesn't even know how to throw a jab right, or, you know, doesn't even, you know nothing about the game. You want this man to continue to fight with a broken jaw, which possibly can just end his whole career on just, you know, if he continues another 30 seconds or a minute or so. You want this guy to just be messed up for life, you know, over, you know, when he can, okay, I can live to see another day, I can bounce back from his broken jaw and come back and do a rematch or whatever and do it like that. You have to think about your family. You have to think
right.
About, you know, your life outside of boxing, you know. Of course you love boxing. Of course Victor Ortiz wanted to continue. Of course, he didn't want to lose. Of course, he didn't want to quit. But if your body tells you, or if your body is messed up to the point where you cannot continue, of course you're gonna have to stop, because you don't want anything damaging to render your career where you can't fight no more. So,
right.
You know, I definitely feel him on that, and you know, look, he's healing right now, and he'll be able to fight again and bounce back and hopefully get the rematch.
If you were in that position, do you stop? And it's a tough question.
I'm not in a situation, so I cannot comment on,
right.
You know, if I would stop, or because I don't know how it feels. I don't want to know how it feels to have a
right.
jaw broken, you
right.
know. So I don't know. I can't say. So hopefully I won't get in that position, so I
right.
can't comment on it.
And just another question around the sport of boxing. You had a few weeks back, Pacquiao Bradley, questionable split decision for Bradley. Who did you have winning that fight?
Yeah, you know what? The first time I watched the fight, you know, I was like, Pacquiao, dang, Pacquiao dominated Bradley, made Bradley look like he was like a, you know, a B-level fighter as opposed to being on the top level of the game or one of the top fighters of,
right.
you know, in a 147-pound division. He made him look like that. But if you go back, you know, Pacquiao, I thought Pacquiao did win the fight, but if you go back, you can see Pacquiao slowed up and Bradley just kept coming, kept, you know, working, and Pacquiao slowed up and wasn't throwing his mean punches at Bradley. So you can't really say, you know, Pacquiao was winning the rounds. Pacquiao would do a flurry every now and again, you know, or whatever, but Bradley would come and, you know, do a 3 or 4 pounce combination, which wasn't affecting him, but he kept throwing. So if you look at it that way, then you have to give Bradley more rounds than what you think he gave him. So I looked at it again and say, hey, Bradley, you know, did better than what, you know, people thought. You know, I gave Bradley probably 4 rounds, you know, but, you know, I thought Pacquiao overall won the fight.
Definitely. And a big fight tonight, excuse me, Danny Garcia, Amir Khan. Big fight, man. Who you have tonight there?
it's gonna be a big one, right here. You know, it's been a lot of trash talking with these guys, and you just never know. Boxing has been full of surprises nowadays, man. You just never know with the Paul Williams stuff, and man, you just never know. But I'm expected Khan to be a tad bit too much for Garcia. But if Garcia can utilize, you know, all that Khan's going to do, like tap, 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 and then run out, jump back out and tap, tap, tap. And if he can utilize that and get to him and do some damage, then it could be a long night for Khan, and he will have to work more than what he wants to. So I got Khan slightly if Garcia, you know, let him just do what he want to do and stay out there and can't do nothing with the, you know, hit and run.
Now let's go back to your situation now. If the fight does not happen with Bailey, will you still be fighting on September 8th?
Definitely. The day stands. You know, I'm still going to be fighting September 8th. The day stands. So we'll just have to see what happens. And hopefully it goes through, everybody comes together and just agree to the terms and we can get it on, because, you know, it's been a lot of trash talk going back and forth with me and him and a lot of people now.
And your manager, Kevin Cunningham, said Bailey going to sign his retirement papers.
So, a lot of trash talk.
So I love it. Definitely. The trash talking is always a fun thing, and it's good for the fight, good for the build-up of the fight.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, you have the Great Promotions. What's going on with that?
The Great Promotions is still up and running right now. You know, like with anything, you know, any business, anything you're trying to do for is promoting or anything, you're going to have to start from the bottom. You got to start from somewhere. I'm the first fighter coming out of the Great Promotions, and we're just going to have to start from there. And once I get to the point where, you know, I can sign other fighters, that's what we're going to do, and we're going to branch out and make this thing big.
And I know you're on Twitter, on Facebook. Where can fans follow you on Twitter?
Facebook is my name, Devin Alexander, and we got Twitter, D Alexander Real. That's D A L E X A N D E R. I mean, D E R E A L. That's Real at the end.
Okay.
And that's me.
Devin, as always, and I got to ask before we get out of here, how's the house?
House is good. You know, I just. There's a little nicks and nacks on the inside of it now. You know, I'm getting it ready. It's looking good. I told you guys come so you can have a barbecue, man.
Definitely. I'm gonna get out there. Maybe
yeah,
I get out there September 8th.
Definitely. You definitely gotta come out then.
Devin, as always, man, it's a pleasure talking to you. We wish you nothing but the best of luck, man. No matter what happens, if it's against Bailey or whoever else. But as always, let's do it again.
Most definitely. Always. You know I got you covered.
Appreciate it. Take care, sir.
Okay.
Devin Alexander, as he prepares for his upcoming bout against Randall Bailey. Some uncertainty there at this point, but Bailey's talking that he didn't get his contracts. And so we'll see what happens there. We'll definitely see what happens with this whole particular fight. But interesting fight, and I think it's a similar fight to me than his fight with Maidana in a lot of ways. Maidana's a heavy hitter, big-time power. And those guys, I think if Devin Alexander boxes him, boxes Bailey, like the way he boxed Maidana, he won't have any problems with Bailey. But if he starts to trade with him, then he may be a little susceptible to that vicious right hand of Randall Bailey's. But at this point, hopefully they can come together and get that fight done and get these two in the ring together. A lot of trash talking, a lot of talking, and then that's a good thing for the sport. I like the talking. You definitely love the talking. It just adds to the intrigue of the fight. I mean, you definitely want to hear talking. It's good. It hypes the fight up, gets people ready to go. And so we'll see. We'll see what happens with that fight, but we appreciate Devin Alexander for stopping by and giving us his take on what may happen September 8th against Randall Bailey. And if Devin get this bout and win that fight, now you're talking a guy with a belt. And anytime you have a belt in boxing, you have leverage. A belt gives you leverage. And so if he can get that belt, he now has leverage. He now has leverage. And that's all the leverage you need right now, and he needs it. He needs it, and he can have leverage if he can get a belt and beat Randall Bailey. Looking around the sporting world, and I know the Celtics have re-signed a few players going to basketball now. The Boston Celtics have re-signed a few players, and Chris Wilcox is one of them, and Chris Wilcox will be joining us next Saturday as Chris Wilcox makes a comeback from his heart surgery that he had a year ago. And he's on his way back, and we're going to talk to Chris Wilcox next Saturday, so make sure you tune in next Saturday, July 21st. We're going to be joined by Chris Wilcox of now the Boston Celtics. He's re-signed by the Celtics, and we're going to talk to him about his comeback and what can we expect from Chris Wilcox in the 2012 NBA season. But we're going to be talking to Chris Wilcox next week, so make sure you stick around for next week. Well, you can't stick around the whole week, but obviously make sure you're here next week to hear that interview with Chris Wilcox. Just looking around the National Basketball Association, Dallas Mavericks, they have claimed Elton Brand off of amnesty waivers. Elton Brand, they win the bid for Elton Brand, $2.1 million, but he's expected to make $18.2 million next year. Obviously, he was amnesty by the Sixers. He still gets that $18 million, but $16 million is going to be paid by the Sixers, and $2 million is going to be paid by the Dallas Mavericks. And a decent pickup for the Mavericks. Definitely a decent pickup for the Mavericks. And right now, the Mavericks are trying to pick up the pieces of what happened for them, what happened to them this offseason. They cleared the cap space to make a run out of Deron Williams. That didn't happen. Steve Nash didn't happen. So now they got to look elsewhere, and they brought in a Darren Collison in a trade. They also have now Chris Kaman. They brought in him as well, and a guy that I was pushing the Indiana Pacers to sign, and I was pushing the Pacers not to match the deal for Roy Hibbert and bring in a Chris Kaman, who numbers-wise, if you look at it, is just as good, if not better, than Roy Hibbert. And the thing about Kaman always is the injury. Injury factor is always big with Chris Kaman. But you look at it with the Dallas Mavericks, they're trying to pick up the pieces. They're bringing in Elton Brand, who's a guy who's going to come off the bench for them and be very good off the bench for that ball club. Also bring in, like I said, Chris Kaman, a guy who can be very good for them as well. And also Darren Collison, who possibly can help their point guard position. Darren Collison had a decent year for the Indiana Pacers. And right now the Mavericks are doing a good job of picking up the pieces. They're also said to be in the running for Luis Scola, who was amnesty by the Houston Rockets. So they're trying to pick up the pieces there. They're trying to pick up the pieces. And right now it looks like they're doing a fairly decent job of picking up those pieces. And they, again, they picked up Collison, Darren Collison of the Indiana Pacers, picked up an Elton Brand, also picked, signed Chris Kaman, and are also in the running for Louis Scola of the Houston Rockets. And Jeremy Lin has signed the offer sheet with the Houston Rockets. The third year should be interesting. In that third year, he's expected to make $14 million. And the Knicks, you know, they have 3 days to match it. You know they're going to match it, but they're not looking forward to having to pay that $14 million in that third year. And they backloaded the deal with the hope that the Knicks would not be able to match it. But it's, the Knicks are going to match it. I talked about Jeremy Lin. Not only is he, has he shown the potential to be a player that many believe will be, and could be, I should say, a successful point guard in the league, but his, what he brings off the court with the Asian American community and the buzz of all of Lin Sanity. I mean, Lin Sanity was a big time buzz. So the buzz, not only what you get off the court with Jeremy Lin with the buzz, but the possibilities of what you can get on the court with Jeremy Lin are there. So the Knicks have to match that offer. And if you're the Rockets, that was a good move for you to try to go after and get, try to go out and get him. That was a good move for you, but Jeremy Lin, Lin Sanity was just off the charts. The buzz was off the charts from Lin Sanity. But now, Jeremy Lin now has signed the offer sheet with the Houston Rockets, but the Knicks will match it. I'd be shocked, I'd be amazed if they don't match it, but they'll match the offer, and Jeremy Lin will end up being a Knick. And how about Kobe Bryant and Kyrie Irving? Those guys going back and forth talking trash, and Kobe and Kyrie talking about, you know, each other, whether or not they can handle each other in a one-on-one type of situation. A lot of trash talking between those two. Whole lot of trash talking between Kyrie and Kobe. I would love to see it. I would love to see one-on-one between those two to see what happens. I mean, a lot of trash talking. Maybe they can do it for charity or something, and they can get a buzz there, and people will watch. Maybe. But the trash talking, you got to love. You got to love the trash talking between those two, Kobe Bryant and Kyrie Irving, and all the trash talking that we're hearing with the Dream Team, the 2012 Dream Team and the 92 Dream Team. Kobe thinks that this team could beat the 2002 Dream Team. And Scottie Pippen came out and said that the Dream Team, the original Dream Team, would beat the 2012 version of this team by 25 points. That's a little bit of a stretch. That's a little bit of a – that's a big number. I don't know about 25 points, but I think that the Dream Team would beat the 2012 version of this team. But the only thing that would change, is whether or not, if you look at it, if Dwight Howard played and he was supposed to play on the team, and Chris Bosh, if he played, then you look at those two things and that changes some things a little bit. But I think the Dream Team overcomes them. I think Scottie Pippen, his defense on the perimeter, Michael Jordan, his defense on the perimeter, and his ability, obviously, to score the basketball and be Michael Jordan. I mean, that's Michael Jordan in his prime. That's Michael Jordan in his prime, everybody. So just take that into account. Michael Jordan in his prime. We want to thank Jason Babin of the Philadelphia Eagles for stopping by. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at JasonBabin93. Also, we want to thank Devin Alexander for stopping by. Follow him on Twitter at DAlexanderReal. Follow him on Twitter there, and he has a big fight coming up September 8th against Randall Bailey. We also want to thank you, the listener, for listening each and every week. And now you can listen to this show and other great shows at blogtalkradio.com/pcant, where you can listen to this show and other great shows. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at GoForItGant. And as I said, scheduled next week, we're going to have Chris Wilcox of the Boston Celtics. He's going to talk about his return from heart surgery. And also, whoever else we bring in next week, we shall see. But again, listen to this show and other great shows, blogtalkradio.com/pcant, where you can listen to this show and other great shows. Follow this show on Twitter at GoForItGant. For everybody here at GoForIt, have a great week. See you later. Bye.